Chapter 7, The Paradox of Completeness, The Recontextualization of a Limitation. One defining feature of form appears to be incompleteness. All form is limited and conditioned. Form is never entirely static. It is a continual, unending, persistent process of change and movement. Ken Wilber, one of the most widely read contemporary philosophers, rests his entire approach on one simple axiom. No one perspective is 100% wrong. He maintains that no one is capable of being completely wrong. To do so would necessitate grasping what is completely right, accurate, and correct. This, for Wilber, is an impossibility. Every perspective, orientation, and position, all different facets of form, are incomplete. They are all approximations. This is the foundation of Wilber's integral philosophy. Everyone is bringing important partial truths that need to be included, and inherent limitations or distortions that need to be clarified. A second feature of Wilber's philosophy supporting an essential incompleteness has to do with his position on the fundamental building blocks of reality. For Wilber, the core foundations are not ideas, as the idealists maintain, nor are the fundamental building blocks of reality matter, as the materialists propose. Rather, reality is composed of perspectives that are holons. A holon is a whole that is simultaneously also a part of a larger whole. We could say a holon is a whole part. Nothing is in and of itself a whole, nor is anything merely a part. Wholes and parts arise together and co-create one another. The series of nesting whole parts reality is composed of has no ultimate limits in terms of the diversity and scope of what holons can come into form. It is open and incomplete. Once again, we find incompleteness as a defining feature of Wilber's thought. French phenomenologist and professor of contemporary philosophy, Renard Barbaros, maintains there is a fundamental incompleteness at the heart of the living being. Similar to Hegel's philosophy, essential to Barbaros' position is movement. According to Barbaros, movement is ontologically irreducible. Similar to our earlier exploration of the primacy of relationship, Barbaros sets forth a position suggesting that movement necessarily engages the essence of the subject. Movement, then, is not a property, mode, or attribute stemming from a presumed separate self or form. You do not have or possess movement. Rather, you are movement, and movement is co-constructing you. Perhaps we could say movement has you, and you have movement. However, according to Barbaros, the prior is more fundamental. Movement is essential, not secondary, as many stages of meaning-making presume. And movement is a function of incompleteness. As Barbaros puts it, life is from the start in touch with things other than itself. Form is always incomplete and open, thus participating with a continual movement, touch, and or exchange with that which is outside of itself. Turning our attention toward mathematics, we again find an essential feature of incompleteness. Kurt Gödel, a close friend of Einstein and philosopher of mathematics, was an immensely influential logician whose significance is perhaps on par with the contributions of Aristotle. He is considered by many to be the greatest mathematical logician to date. His most famous and influential contribution is known as Gödel's incompleteness theorem of 1931. This theorem maintains that within any consistent system, there is a part that is neither provable nor refutable. Either the arithmetic is inconsistent, or there is at least one of its truths that arithmetic cannot prove. Gödel demonstrates absolute limits to what we can achieve by reasoning within a formal system. All consistent systems, form included, are inherently incomplete. The Oxford Companion to Philosophy calls his incompleteness theorem a high point not only for logic, but also for the 20th century culture. As his math demonstrated a novel scope of logical reasoning, which also turned out to be influential for the invention of digital computers. Again, incompleteness can be a root source of immense creativity. The two tastes of completeness. We can see incompleteness rooted in philosophy. Incompleteness can be found in the close inspection of subjective experience, as in Barbaros's Phenomenology, and in some of the greatest discoveries in mathematics. We could continue our survey in physics if we were to look to the work of Werner Heisenberg, Nobel Prize recipient and creator of quantum mechanics. His famous uncertainty principle reveals an intrinsic incompleteness to what we can know about subatomic phenomena. If we were to tour other fields of study, such as economics, neuroscience, or semantics, we might also reveal a core incompleteness. Presumably many, if not all, human endeavors reveal incompleteness as an essential feature if we bring a sufficient level of developmental complexity to a subject matter. So while we might say incompleteness is at the core of who and what you are, this does not mean all completeness is merely a function of the conventional self's projects of driving toward more homeostasis, autonomy, and or separateness exhibited in the self-authoring mind. Nor can completeness be entirely relegated to the self's desire to merge with another, whether this is a lover, leader, friend, and or group, as we often find in the socialized mind. These are but one facet or one taste of completeness. The drive for cohesive integrity in the various facets of your relative life all can and do yield varying degrees of experiencing wholeness and completeness. Your innate movement toward a coherent narrative of the memories and events of your life are one example of the cohesive integrity of your self's integration. The basic pursuit of trust in relationship is another. This natural shaping of social space, such that the shared connection of we feels good and allows our respective nervous systems to relax, is another. Even the integration and coordination of the right half of your body with the left half is a function of your self's cohesive integrity, providing you with relative experiences of wholeness and completeness. Yet, these are all only one taste of completeness. When we turn our attention to the second taste of completeness, it also appears to be at the very core of who and what we are, just as incompleteness is. While contradictory, it appears the elegant self is the embrace, inhabitation, and movement of an unresolvable contradiction and tension. The inclusion of completeness and incompleteness does appear to be one central facet of elegance. So while you may suspend parts of the cohesive integrity of your more conventional self, thus pausing the completion project's activity and functioning in the world, elegance often participates with a larger, more pervasive completeness in a more ongoing way. The second taste of completeness stems from or is rooted in the formless dimension of you, which we first encountered as we peered in Sam's session in Chapter 4. Sam's inadequacy was related to both his biographical relationship with the relative experiences of falling short in some ways, and the ontological transition of being empty, open, black space, which had no limitation and is without form, to becoming a small, vulnerable being that is incredibly limited in form. Whether you are aware of it or not, it appears that perhaps you too possess a part of you that has no parts. Here, you hold no conditioning. You are fundamentally not moving. This part of you remains unmoved, regardless of your relative experience. You have no limitation and no location. One way you may refer to this facet of experience is through the concept of big mind, or big mind, big heart, as Zen teacher Diane Musho Hamilton calls it. We can speak of this taste of completeness as you, a profound mystery holding nothing and thus being completely empty. This facet of you is without form, and thus without any of the limitations of partiality and incompleteness. This facility of you is limitless and timeless. Your formlessness appears to be all-pervading and inaccessible, or, put another way, unavoidable. This unifying formlessness creates the second taste of completeness, the center of subjectivity. Subjectivity can be thought of as having two basic facets. We can look at the first as being a lens that you look through. The lens has properties, and thus it colors, shapes, and co-creates the objects of your experience, in addition to cohering yourself and the world of objects you live in. For instance, the lens of the socialized mind colors and coheres experience so that the authority ultimately resides outside in the expert, the parent, boss, and or group. A world is co-created in this mind where conformity is incredibly important. Similarly, the lens of the self-authoring mind shapes the objects and experience, although now differently, with greater complexity. Authority has more nuance to it now. Sometimes the authority resides out there, and sometimes the authority can be experienced within. This lens colors experience such that conformity still matters, yet so does a standing apart from the group. These features of the form of the lens are initially unseen facets of experience. However, through development, as explored in Chapter 2, the subject becomes object. Your lenses increasingly shift from subject and become objects that can be related to, managed, and more intentionally negotiated. The second facet of subjectivity is much more mysterious. Perhaps you have had the experience of looking deeply into the eye of a lover, or maybe you were up late at night washing your face, and all of a sudden you caught yourself in the mirror, and you were taken by curiosity, where you peer into the very center of an eye and feel a sense of mystery. Who are you, or who am I, are two of the recurring perennial questions. At the center of subjectivity, there is a mystery. The subject, by definition, can never truly see itself. You have actually never seen, nor presumably will ever see, the source of your subjectivity. You will likely never see the very essence of you. Similarly, the source of your lover's subjectivity, the center of who and what he or she is, perhaps is equally unknowable. The second facet of subjectivity appears to be the source of the second taste of completeness. The experience of mystery is one of the most basic responses to the part of you with no form, no limitation, and ultimately no definition. The subjective ground, or mystery, is always already separate, complete, and distinct from the objects of experience. This brings forth what is likely, again, an unresolvable tension within you. One facet is incomplete, interpenetrable, and in a dynamic relationship with an ongoing experiential flux, while another is complete, untouchable, and in an unchanging, unconditioned relationship with the entire display of the ever-blooming experiential flux of phenomena. The parts of you having form are always incomplete, while the part of you that is without form remains spontaneously complete. We can think of these as two selves, the self as form and the self without form. However, it is important to return to the understanding that these two types of self are ultimately one larger, more capable self. Elegance requires an open, participatory relationship with both dimensions of yourself. These contradictory positions can at times appear to be conflictual, yet they are also cooperative. It is the dynamic tension and creative cooperation between these underlying dimensions of you that is required for your participation with elegance. It appears that the ability to open into the immediacy of your experience without many of the habituated closures of your conventional self rests on a grounding as your unconditioned completeness that is in part separate from the changing manifold of experience in form. This separation can often be experienced as a type of liberation or transcendence of form. It is important to note here that this is where our exploration of elegance takes a departure from many forms of spiritual and religious practices aimed at a transcendence of the world. This facet of liberation serves a larger engagement with and as the world of form. Elegance brings with it a broader, more fuller participation with the immediacy of your relative life. To give an example, in the case of facilitation, we can find the elegant facilitator unwilling to exclusively consolidate a conventional self around her self as form. As she quietly rests in the self without form, she is better able to use herself as form as an instrument. Most notably, her ability to listen, attune, and resonate with specific individuals and the group as a whole is rooted in her ability to be open and receptive. The self without form excels here. In contrast, her ability to intervene and direct is found in herself as form and its unique set of skills. The elegant facilitator embodies an open participatory relationship with both facets. Listening and directing are often contradictory to one another. Most adults do one or the other. However, they can be trained and refined, as found in the masterful facilitation trainings conducted by facilitation experts Diane Hamilton and Rebecca Caldwell. Here, our facilitator learned to cooperate in her larger maturity so that the intervening and direction given is simultaneously an instrument to listen more carefully. And the quality of her listening itself is also a part of the intervention. It is here that we can find the elegant facilitator broadening her participation with her life while simultaneously not being limited by the forms and scenarios life takes on. Elegance leverages your unconditioned completeness to weather the often turbulent, chaotic, and dysregulating experiences in life that appear to be largely unavoidable over time. One way I like to talk about this second taste of completeness and its usefulness is to use an analogy of an insurance policy. Regardless of how developed your self's cohesive integrity is, the ongoing complexity of life's demands are likely to exceed your ability to maintain homeostasis. The stability or maturity of your relative self is always limited and incomplete. While you might not prefer the anxiety, discomfort, and dysregulation inherent in being pressed beyond your comfort zones, these can be, and often are, a potent source for development if the turbulence is within a workable range. Embracing the part of you with access to an unconditioned seat of completeness dramatically shifts what you can embody, transmute, and negotiate skillfully. While it is wise to continue to expand the relative maturity of you, as we discussed in Chapter 2, I also recommend an insurance policy to back up and support your more relative completeness and stability. Do not place all your assets on one form or taste of completeness. The relative integrity of your more conventional self is, in the big picture, fairly unstable when compared to the completeness and stability that is unconditioned, unmoving, and unlimited. Two facets are important to explore with regards to the insurance policy unconditioned completeness can provide. Access to or recognition of the second taste of completeness is the first facet, and your participation with the formless is the second. Many adults function with mainly their relative, somewhat tenuous completeness resting on the cohesive integrity of their conventional selves. As such, the self often consolidates in opposition to some polarity, as we have already explored at length. As you know, this constricts functionality and performance in the world. Cutting yourself off of some energetic or experiential quality that is already present is an active severance from the larger possibility of embrace and skillful negotiation. This polar organization of the self, where you are protecting against some foreign polar experience, establishes a situation where presumably only half of the full range of experience is safe. Elegance is simply not possible with this split governing the self's conduct in the world. Let us look at two different ways to sign on and leverage this larger, unconditioned insurance plan. Turning towards subjectivity, accessing the unconditioned. The first step towards reinforcing the self's ability to skillfully negotiate the complex demands of life is to access and/or recognize the formless, unconditioned stability of what we could call the essential heart of subjectivity. Turn your attention and perspective toward the center or source of your subjectivity. As you focus your attention and perspective here, you may notice a number of objects beginning to arise. Regardless of what inner objects surface, continue to direct your attention and perspective into the unmoving and unknowable mystery at the center of subjectivity. Many people find this to be calming and cooling to their nervous systems, even in the midst of some of the most intense and dissonant experiences. This center point is always available. I have seen this simple gesture of turning toward one's own subjective center calm, relax, and open people in the face of some of the most challenging demands life has to offer. For example, a man telling his wife that he is going to file for a divorce, a woman facing her terminal cancer diagnosis, an individual losing his or her job, and then home, the death of a child, or the loss of one's life's work in the face of a corporate takeover. The list could go on, regardless of what stressful events life hands us, our relative self's cohesive integrity is often rocked by the larger waves of life. Opening to a larger integrity, stability, and unmoving presence enables your larger maturity to make peace with the immediacy of life, even in the most challenging of contexts, war and violence included. Making peace with the loss of our relative comfort is at the center of our discussion. Your relative stability will likely be knocked around again, regardless of your strategies and positioning. Avoiding this disturbance is, in part, the growth of your maturity, and it is also often a strategy to avoid the full spectrum of your experiential aliveness, which often, at some point, stunts your larger post-conventional maturity. Often, it is a habituated contraction away from the complexity of immediacy. When this happens, identity shrinks into the lesser completeness of your relative self. Our developing executive, Jim, who we visited in Chapter 6, illustrates this insurance policy as he met with his team and began to take the first steps to lead from his incompleteness. The anxiety, uncertainty, and desire to revert back into his more comfortable and known leadership style were negotiated from his ability to separate himself out of his conditioning. Jim was not only beginning to participate with a larger current of information flow within himself and his team, but he was also participating with a larger seat of completeness, as he was able to simultaneously take space from the powerful desire to collapse back into the leadership habits of his past. Turning toward the experiential flux, formless embodied participation. The second step is a participation with the less bounded or perhaps unbounded experiential flux in and as immediacy. While the first consideration involved a turning toward the center of your subjectivity, the second involves allowing a counter-instinctual move to occur. This shift in orientation involves you getting closer to the experiential intensity most responsible for disturbing your relative self's homeostatic comfort. This can occur by developing your embodiment. Embodiment can be thought of as having at least three central processes. Lose one and your embodiment erodes. This causes your ability to participate with the immediacy of life to shrink. Three processes of embodiment are embracing, inhabiting, and moving. These processes have been hierarchically arranged for our discussion. However, in the complexity inherent in and as the moment, a much more complex and non-linear exchange is likely at play connecting these three processes. That said, let us begin with embrace. The process of embrace means to cast out or reach outward, thus enabling you to encompass or envelop some facet of experience. In this case, your counter-instinctual move is to embrace the most provocative and disturbing facets of experience. This gesture involves an encircling or including. For example, when your mind considers a novel perspective, it opens and expands as it reaches out and includes this novelty. This is an expression of embracing, just as your arms reach out and extend to embrace the loved one in a hug. The second process is inhabiting. When you inhabit something, you are on the inside. To give you an example, let us consider the scenario where you are standing across the street from your home. You are looking at the front door, the windows, the color of the home, and the roof. At this point, you are not inhabiting your home. You're looking at it. When you cross the street and walk along the path to the front door, you are not inhabiting your home until your hand reaches out opens the front door and you step inside. It is here, when you're actually inside of your home, that you can say you are inhabiting your house. Similarly, embodiment requires you to inhabit, not merely look at, experience. To embody a facet of yourself, you must be on the inside. The more perception originating from the inside of experience, the greater your embodiment is. The location or root of perception is the differentiating criteria. Just as I can ask you if you are perceiving your home from the inside or the outside, a useful inquiry to ask yourself is, am I perceiving facets of experience from the inside or the outside? To inhabit requires resting the faculty of perception into an intimacy with the inside of the various dimensions of experience. Finally, embodiment expands in important ways when you allow the already ever-present movement or flux of phenomena to move, shape, and influence you in more full, less constrained ways. By turning toward the experiential flux through softening distinctness, releasing separateness, and embodying more of the immediacy of experience, you are likely to discover an interesting, often unexpected, response. By making the counterinstinctual move of turning toward and opening to the most provocative, challenging, and intense facets of experience, you can heighten your ability to participate with the unconditioned completeness and formless, unmoving stability provided by the self without form. The interpenetrating subjectivity introduced in Chapter 3 flowers or opens more fully in an energetic exchange with the formless dimensions of you. When you employ this insurance policy, the incompleteness at the root of yourself as form can be heightened, refined, and opened further. As the self without form provides a grounded, unconditioned, and stable completeness, the self as form can participate as the unmediated bloom of immediacy in a now larger scope. The self without form is empty, yet this mysterious, open, and unconditioned seat of subjectivity is intimately connected with the self as form. We can think of this as a clearer, more direct perception of and participation with immediacy. This broader bandwidth of information flow yields greater attunement and skillful means, which ultimately provides an important facet to the ingenuity found within your elegance. While the drive for completion often found in the conventional stages of development often stunts the post-conventional development required for human elegance, the second taste of completeness provides a powerful source of stability that is often needed to openly participate within your larger interpenetrating self. Again, we find the polarity of completeness and incompleteness being embraced. This time, the self as form provides the essential seat of incompleteness, while the self without form offers the second taste of completeness. Ultimately, elegance nurtures the relative self's cohesive integrity. Yet, given the intrinsic challenges in life, your self as form will be thrown off center. Elegance actually welcomes these challenging experiences with a grace and a creative aptitude for responsiveness that conventional stages of development are unable to yield. Why? We could say that this greater skillfulness is due to the unconditioned insurance policy we are discussing. To get one, you cannot be largely invested in the completeness projects found in the socialized mind and/or the self-authoring mind. Furthermore, while you may typically pay a monthly or annual premium for a more conventional insurance policy, this insurance policy is negotiated in the immediacy of the moment. This coverage either holds you now, or you are presumably left fending for your relative self-stability and completeness. the next stage of development. One of the ways Keegan defines the self-transforming mind is by putting forth the position that this stage's subjectivity is identified with the process of form creation, whereas the self-authoring mind is subjectively embedded in the self as form. Keegan asks, 1. Do we see the self as system as complete and whole, or do we regard the self as system as incomplete, only a partial construction of all that the self is? 2. Do we identify with the self as form, or do we identify with the process of form creation? Another way of putting this second question is, do we take as prior the elements of a relationship or the relationship itself, which creates its elements? Take note of these important distinctions. Our exploration of the second taste of completeness appears to bring us in some way a step beyond the self-transforming mind. Instead of only being identified as the process of form creation, there is now greater flexibility, a larger vantage point, and likely more skillful means. If the incompleteness of the self as form is followed in its larger complexity and the second taste of completeness is discovered, there is, in some ways, the ability to take the process of form creation as object. And features of the self without form have now emerged. At times, this formless self may be identified with, while at other times, the self as form may be more identified with. We will pick up this topic in our next chapter. However, one final point. At some place in development, the self makes a leap beyond the polarity of incompleteness and absolute completeness. Mysteriously, this elegant self is continually co-created from the unknowable formless dimensions and the intrinsic partiality of form creation. This part known, part discovered, and part undiscoverable subjectivity is elegance. A just relationship between states and stages. The first exercise below is often offered for individuals who are unfamiliar with the formless facets of experience. A few distinctions are often helpful and in many cases essential before we outline the injunctions of these exercises. First, as we saw in Sam's session, glimpses into the unconditioned and formless facets of the self are often initially experienced as black, open space. As we touched on earlier, experience often can reflect a pervasive mystery. We can think of these types of experiences as part of an acclimation phase, limitless space, a void that feels full or pregnant, infinite blackness, and the deep doubt and uncertainty in your gut are all facets of experience that have and are inside of form. None are formless. And these forms are pressing up against that which is unconditioned and formless. Turning toward the subject is an injunction with a very long history. Yoga, being the oldest unbroken literary tradition on the planet, dates back some 5,000 to 6,000 years, with some yogic and Vedic scholars suggesting yoga's roots reach back even further. Many other forms of religious and spiritual practices have used these injunctions and similar ones for thousands of years. If you happen to have access to the yogic Dharma instructions or their Christian, Islamic, Hindu, Buddhist, Native American, or other traditions similarly related exercises, feel free to integrate these freely. However, it is essential these exercises are situated accordingly. In many cases, the exercise of turning your attention towards subjectivity results in powerful states of consciousness. This book is ultimately not about you cultivating states of consciousness. It is about you growing developmentally. While there are many multifaceted and complex relationships between states of consciousness and stages of development, the reason this practice is even included, it is essential for you to understand that achieving various states of consciousness is not the principal aim of this book, nor the guiding intelligence of your elegance. I bring this up because it is not uncommon for someone to spend decades of their life devoted to the cultivation of these states, even from just a single taste of the type of transcendence this injunction and others are capable of providing. States of consciousness are, by definition, temporary or transitive and exclusive. They come and they go. While a state is here, it excludes other facets of experience. The stages of development we are exploring are, in contrast, relatively enduring and are integrative at their heart. Ultimately, your elegance is fluid between any state and the many stages of complexity you have access to. Both are included. However, as our larger aim is the growth of your mind and not the expansion of a state of your mind, states serve stages. To leverage stages to serve states is a massive confusion and results in what appears to be the certain dismantling of elegance. States, in their transient and excluding functions, largely fail to deal with the ongoing and persistent challenges facing planet Earth and all forms of life on it, as well as the ongoing challenges in your personal life and relationships. Ultimately, the empty, formless dimension of you appears to be intimately and perhaps always engaged with the unfolding flux of form. This is one of the essential differences as we explore elegance. The grand liberation of formlessness is an integrated gesture of intimately engaging with and as the form of your life. This means the relatively enduring development of mind is being cultivated to face the immense challenges you now face personally and we face together. Exercises to leverage unconditioned completeness. The two exercises below, turning toward subjectivity and turning toward experiential flux, which we touched on above, are designed for individuals who are outgrowing autonomy and/or for those interested in growing into interpenetrating subjectivity. You will see an emphasis on your separateness bringing these exercises into your experience, which is the basic architecture of doing an exercise. This traditional orientation to exercises is a good starting point. However, I want to presence a second orientation to exercises. Learn the exercises and then allow them to go. This means once you have learned and integrated these exercises, you can, at times, cease to impose them on the immediacy of experience. Once these have been integrated, you are invited to allow these exercises and the various permutations and subtle nuances that come with the creative flux of relative experience to do you. One orientation brings these exercises into the moment through the vehicle of your autonomous effort, while the other discovers these exercises as a natural facet of experience that is already doing you. Both orientations prove to be important as you practice these facets of the flexibility of elegance. Turning toward subjectivity, accessing the unconditioned. Begin by relaxing as the immediacy of this moment. This is often accompanied by a loosening in your body-mind where your jaw softens, shoulders melt down your back, and your breath drops down easily into your belly. Similarly, the aperture of attention often softens and opens, bringing a larger cacophony of experiential immediacy to flux and flow through awareness. Relax any effort to reach outward, add to or change what is already present. Instead, allow immediacy to wash through your nervous system just as it is. Participate with the natural movement of attention and awareness as subjectivity condenses around facets of experience and then opens and releases. Regardless of this activity, begin to nurture an open curiosity around the origin of your subjectivity. Allow attention and awareness to constellate around this curiosity. As attention is drawn toward parts, aspects of, and features of experiential flux, gently open attention around objects and again sense toward the already present, free, separate, and complete subject behind all experience. Notice how subjectivity is effortless. Sense into how nothing is required to have experience. Subjectivity is completely free. Objects in experience are present without intervention. Subjectivity is always already distinct from the changing flux of experience. Allow perception to rest precisely where and as it is. Subjectivity is always already free from every facet of experience. Participate as this simplicity. Float as the spaceless, colorless, senseless opening of subjectivity. You are unconditioned unity. Right now, without effort or control, you are open awareness free of form. You are space. As you sense mystery, not knowingness, a broader curiosity, or simple space, turning toward the origin of subjectivity, let go. Turning toward subjectivity, accessing the unconditioned. 1. Relax as immediacy. 2. Participate with the natural movements of subjectivity. 3. Notice the effortlessness of subjectivity. 4. Gently turn toward subjectivity's origin. 5. Let go. Turning toward experiential flux, formless embodied participation. For the time being, set aside preferences and commit to participating with the truth of your experience as it already is. Begin by broadening the participation as the buoyant immediacy of this moment. Trust this. Trust your body posture as it is right now. Trust the form, posture, and movement of your mind without limit. Trust breath. Allow your breathing to do you. Trust tension. Participate as the holding and or releasing of this. Trust this moment such that your trust envelops and includes any mistrust. Allow the form and structure of you to be exactly how yourself as form is right now. Movement co-creates immediacy. Participate with and as the innate movements without hesitation and or undue mediation. Embrace, inhabit, and become precisely what is here. The aperture of you opens within and around the direct immediacy of experiential flow. The flux of form and experience are you. Beyond your habituated preferences, effortless participation with experience is already happening. participate with this. Allow subjectivity's openness to the blooming immediacy of experience to co-create you. Turning toward experiential flux, formless embodied participation. 1. Setting aside preferences, broaden participation with immediacy. 2. Trust this. 3. Participate with and as movement. 4. Be and become the blooming immediacy of experience.